Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the SmackDown review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by another one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hafler from What Culture, to review everything happening on this week's episode of Friday Night SmackDown. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube. We do daily wrestling podcasts where we not review SmackDown, but also the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. AEW Dynamite, AEW Collision, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete. A quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, they're joined by Hanford to review SmackDown. And, well, I suppose, yet another episode that was... absolute cinema, or should I say a musical?
Oh, it's both. It's musical theatre. Right. Quick production note before we get started on the review proper, because we're going in hot, let's be honest, aren't we, on this SmackDown. We've done that salute on camera once. It hurt our legs when we tried to actually aim it at the hard camera down the lens.
Tom Spurrier here, didn't we? Yeah.
Yeah. We do it on a Friday morning when it feels extremely Friday and silly.
Oh, yes.
It's good. You've got SmackDown to look forward to. You've got Da Weekend to look forward to. Never done it before, where ostensibly there's no cameras filming.
Uh-huh.
But we are joined in the presence of our wonderful producer, Adam Nicholas, who just has to sit there while we salute nothing. We're not acknowledging a camera.
No. Nope.
Barely acknowledging
each other. Just our crotches.
Just that's it. You can just all of a sudden see your own crotch on a screen.
Mm-hmm.
I've never felt more proud. And I want to say this now because I've seen some comments. We did the news together today.
Yes.
And I want to address the comments. I believe it's Excalibur that says you've got to give the people what they want, which is weird because he says that about a best friend segment. But he says that, and he's right in pro wrestling. You've got to give the people what they want. Yes. We've got a lot of that on this SmackDown. And the comment simply suggested that me and you, I think we've could have been accused of this in the past. We've done well to skirt this criticism for a long time. Have been accused of complaining too much about WWE.
Yeah.
So a lot less of that on this podcast, I've decided.
Positive vibes only.
Positive vibes only. I am prepared for the good of the listenership to get a bit more pro-fed.
Because otherwise we'd sort of be wedged between Dwayne and my crotch on camera. We'd be stuck between the rock and a hard place. So let's get into it.
It took such a long time to get there. I knew where you were going.
Yeah. That's the best jokes.
Yeah. Like a rock 10-minute Instagram video.
We haven't got time to even talk about that. Maybe we'll talk about it in the Q&A.
Oh, yeah.
We start with a big recap of what happened with Bloodline, Cody and Seth the other week, and The Rock's music. The Rock's new music? New old music?
Oh, my God.
He has his entrance, which is, of course...
Oh, my God.
The manner is strong.
Slap in the arm. Wilborn, this wasn't perfection. It gave me an erection. I couldn't believe it. Like, he's not even made it past the first bit of the stage and that was a segment of the year.
Yes.
Like, the Hollywood Rock comparison is made in the most glowing of terms. Mm. Like, people that lived through it or people that have rewatched in any kind of rewatch, whether or not you're watching Raw or not, remember that period. It's preserved in amber because The Rock turned up, was 50 times the performer of just about everybody else on the roster. I said just about everybody else because he was 100 times the performer of Triple H, the World Heavyweight Champion. He put the frigging Hurricane over.
Yeah.
He set up a match with Steve Austin that really had no right because, as we knew, Austin, as it turned out, had these horrendous health problems. Rock was only going to be sticking around for another month after this. So the stakes had never really been lower, and yet it still felt massive and WrestleMania-worthy. Like, 17 and 15, this was not.
No.
And yet it was a special bit of work. He had, like, obviously taken a few acting classes, and suddenly Brian Gee wore it to scripting, came alive a bit through The Rock, cinema star that is now a special guest in wrestling, and then even put Goldberg like over on his way out.
All the way over, yeah.
Left. Triple H squashed the Hurricane. Triple H made Goldberg go 20 minutes, pinned him in the Elimination Chamber. It was like, I think The Rock's better, guys. So there's a reason why that and that run is so beloved.
Yes.
But not discussed enough reason why that run is so beloved is the friggin' entrance theme, where they slowed it down, where they made him feel like he was just too big for all of this. Mm-hmm. Real heelish stuff. How dare you leave us for, like, highly weird, so much so that you've got your own theme now. And it was the one ingredient I didn't even know was missing from this near-perfect 2024 Rock run.
Oh.
Completed it. Tick, tick, motherfucking tick.
Yes.
Right? I saved you a beat there.
Thanks.
I noticed Cedric Raw ahead on the Raw preview this morning, so I'm going to try and keep the streak going to Mania. Just perfection before he'd even made it to the ring.
And there is a question I want to ask you about what this means for the rest of the WWE roster. But we'll talk about it after I go through the segment.
They can't. Nobody else can have the theme.
No.
We're not letting somebody else have it when he leaves.
Austin Theory, congratulations.
Christian, when he left, right? Christian got peeps.
Yes.
Because he was like, you've got the people. And Rock was like, I'll do out with anyone. What you need me for a month? Well, Christian were kind of looking to get over. Right, I've got the people, he's got the peeps, because he's like an inferior version of me. Like, 25 years later, like, he's still got his peeps. Everybody gets something.
Yeah.
You're knocking Karrion Kross's music.
And The Rock gets everything. He comes out here in Memphis, a huge baby face, despite everything that's gone on.
Less than I do.
And he gets on the mic and he says that he's been scorching cities lately, but tonight's different. This city's different. He talks about first working as Flex Cavana in Memphis, Tennessee. He admits he didn't really know what he was thinking back then. So he does, finally, The Rock has come back home. Always hits me.
Memphis, Tennessee. Oh.
He promises some fun. It's been years. He says, look, this is in Memphis. This is the home of the Blues and Elvis, and Rock loves all that. And he wants to sing with everyone. He's got Max from War and Treaty.
And the Yellow Peter. The War and Treaty were in the crowd, weren't they? Was it on Raw or something?
Oh, maybe,
they're
yeah.
Kicking around recently at another show.
And Yellow P's there as well. He gets a nice reaction, and he gets into it. I normally attempt to emulate certain performances or certain readings of or verbatim readings of what goes down on the Fed. I'm not going to even attempt to copy this. I'm just going to read what he said. Because I've got that verbatim, obviously. That's where my focus has been this morning. The Rock is going to come and lay the smacketh down on your blonde Cody ass and your best friend the clown. I'm going to whip your ass and break that back. Or maybe I'll just beat you with my fanny pack. And he's got the picture of him in the fanny pack.
Look at the Titan.
Of course.
Oh, my God.
And then he turns his attention to Cody specifically. He says, Dusty's youngest son was just what he feared. He tried to raise him right, but he turned out too weird. Picture of Stardust. That's when Dusty said with total frustration that drugs and cheap condoms was a bad combination.
Love that, right? Because I thought, he's going left. He's going to, should have just stuck with masturbation. He went right and he made a joke about a broken condom. That's the levels. That's a great one.
He knows he keeps Cody awake to know he wasn't planned and he was a mistake. Then he says his attention to Seth Rollins. Cackling and dancing is all that you do. No wonder your wife is more popular than you. You're so desperate to make them cheer, but The Rock is going to make your title disappear.
He keeps saying that.
Yeah.
Is he going to just bin the belt?
Yeah.
Like, he's not saying it in the way that, like, I've got...
Producer it.
I've got... Yeah, I've got... I'm going to beat you so bad that Drew McIntyre's going to squash you. He's not mentioned his name once.
Nah.
Just twice now. He's like, I could just make that gone. I'm a boss.
He's just going to be there on the Raw after WrestleMania going, good job you won, Drew. Otherwise, that title would be down.
Just like Triple H, nice belt you introduced there.
Just the reverse Triple H on the Raw after Mania. We don't need that belt. You're simply an embarrassment, son. Just like Jay Morant when he's waving a gun. It's a local football, sports reference, I should say. Didn't really get it, but it got a great reaction.
Imagine gun waving. Yeah.
And then he turns his attention to, well, me and Handful at the Cody Crybabies. You're also entitled, obnoxious and brash. Some of you have sex, but you have to pay cash. Your hero's going to bleed and need some stitches. So what about that, you crybaby bitches? Huge pap, obviously.
Yeah,
you never saw it coming.
There's some lines, Hamlet, that you just don't cross. You can all kiss the ass of the final boss and repeat. And the crowd unsurprisingly, bloody loved this, as you and I did as well.
Repeat was great. Final Boss's nickname is superb because
he sort of nicked that from Roman.
Yeah. Well, this is it. It's absolutely there to, I don't know, like sort of prick at the wafer-thin notion that he is a level below Roman, having acknowledged him, you know, the thing the other week where, like, Roman wasn't reaching the wrist for mana.
No, no.
He was reaching it for to stop him talking. So that is theoretically the current setup, the order to these things. Cody and Seth, no different. We are now let into no different. He's calling, like, the final boss. We'll maybe talk about this after this segment has concluded. It's like the fourth week in a row since this match has existed, and I've basically changed my mind on how the match is going to finish for the fourth week in a row.
We could barely decide on the news how it starts, i.e. who comes out in what order.
There's nothing this match hasn't got. No. Like, the only thing working against this match, and I never thought I would say this, and I'm doubting it even as I say it, is that it's all set up so wonderfully that the fact that, like, a lot of people, the majority of the people in the building on night two won't be seeing Cody and Roman for the same time, it might take them a little bit longer to just lock in because they'll have seen Cody and Roman in this setting.
Yes.
And this setting is going to be so incredible and otherworldly that then when you see them in the singles face off, it might take a minute to reach the heat it had at bell time this time last year.
Unless it's Bloodline Rules, of course, which is exactly what I want my allegiance to switch from night one to night two.
Do we think if it is Bloodline Rules, Rock's going to bring up that like PowerPoint presentation again, and everybody that is alive from that screen is going to be ringside.
So I just cross them off, yeah.
Just like everyone ringside. No, I don't mean at the front row of the Rock Sport tickets. I mean stood in front of the barrier, they can attack Cody. You got, like, I don't know, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Jey Uso fighting off as many people as possible.
Jesus! So anyway, Rock takes the mic following that, replays the slap heard around the world, he said, look, slap the taste out of my mouth, but I smiled about it. And a couple of days later, I was watching Cody on Raw. You know, all the attention was on him after that. And then we see Cody getting emotional about not being able to hand the title to his dad, but he's going to be able to hand it to his mom. And he's on the verge of tears, to which The Rock responds, "You got to be shitting me."
It was worse on Instagram as well.
Yeah, it was arguably even better.
I thought SmackDown was the blue brand, but I'll follow The Rock on socials.
Cody's not going to be giving anyone anything after Mania, but he's not going to focus on Cody right now. He's going to focus on Cody's mwah. Mama Rhodes. He knows she's watching, he knows she's listening, and she's not going to like it, but she's going to get to know The Rock. He's going to make Cody pay his family pay, and Cody's mind pay after taking something away from The Rock. Night one, he's going to beat Cody and Seth. Then night two, Bloodline Rules. Mama Rhodes wants her son to hand her the title. But that's staying around with a waste of Roman Reigns. But she is going to get a belt. She's going to get The Rock's belt. And he pulls out the Rock weight belt that we saw on Instagram, like you say. There's quite a few in this show, by the way, whoop that trick chance, which I was very happy about. Trick Williams is over like Rover.
Bad news.
Go on.
I was excited for that too. That's something to do with local sports.
Disagree. It's a Trick Williams reference.
Okay.
And it will be forever.
Yeah.
Rock's going to beat Cody with his belt, make Cody bleed, beat him like a dog over and over. There might be some effing and Jeff in there again, actually. But he's going to stain the belt with Cody's blood. And then when he's done that and Roman's beat Cody, he's going to hand Michelle... This bloodstained belt is going to be covered in his blood. It's going to be covered in her tears. She's going to be crying like her son. And Rock is going to walk over to her and whisper in her ear, "Michelle, what can I say except you're welcome if you smell what the final boss is cooking?"
Oh, my God.
My only question to you regarding this is The Rock too good?
But well, yeah, 1997 to present, realistically, save for periods where I think there was some reasonable doubt, The Rock has proven beyond that once he locks in, once he's actually committed to a bit, and for a lot of years, that bit was simply going out there and going, "Alala, willy, poo-poo," effectively, but the bit he is committed to since Vegas, let's be honest, like the Goosebumps, we don't need to tap for mana. It's just fun to do so because the Goosebumps haven't gone down since Vegas.
No.
Like as soon as that pivot took place and the Rock locked in, it's all been gold. So this is like not for me to like look this gift horse in the mouth, but it's just one more week of greatness from the great one.
Yeah.
Like I can understand, this was the week where I could understand where the Rock concert is designed ostensibly for the Rock to mock the crowd, to mock the local sports heroes, all that sort of stuff. We had this the last time before. One of your favorite things to go back and revisit is the original Rock concert of 2003, where Leaving the Lakers beat the Kings in me.
Sacramento.
But the crowd boos and then pops.
Yes.
It's that reaction where, oh, you bastard. Hey! Like, he loves it. It's the Rock in Toronto, you know, that like, it's all that sort of stuff. He's a force of nature in that in this setting. Kind of the opposite to Black Adam, actually. Like, this is where he belongs, being as entertaining as he is. It is sort of impossible to boo. And as a wrestler, like, gets the trunks and boots on at WrestleMania, I would like him to square that circle. Mm-hmm. I would like him to do what he did against Hulk Hogan when he had to think on the fly and be the bad guy. Mm-hmm. I would like him to embrace that side of it because I think Cody and Seth need to be the all-conquering hero, even if they fail, and we'll maybe get to that.
Yeah.
They need to be presented as the all-conquering heroes when it comes to match time. And when The Rock's out there with the rest of the bloodline, you are reminded, oh, he's associating with them. Ugh. Like, Cody over here is the proper guy. And, oh, The Rock. But out there on his own was the first time where there was, like, there's kind of no distractions. He was almost lifted from the storyline, yeah. And he was just, like, he was embracing being as popular as he is, no matter if he gets back to the line about the sports team, and then especially the lines about Cody's mother.
Jeez.
The Moana reference, which he has kept in the back pocket and waited for the exact right moment to use it. Like my kids would be wowed at seeing The Rock on TV if they would ever watch wrestling, which they fucking won't. But like, they'd be wowed at seeing The Rock on television and be like, oh Christ, it's Maui. And then delivering the Maui line, but in the most sinister way imaginable, that he's going to hand a
super close up as well.
A blood and sweat stained belt
and tear.
To the mother of the victim of his attack. It was like, we've got a little inadvertent litmus test about this sort of content, haven't we? And like, all three Dadley boys this morning shared the same anecdote of, yeah, I showed it to my wife. Yeah, me too. Yeah, me three. Yeah, they all popped.
Yeah.
Like, it's got like, Moana at this point is probably The Rock's most universal reference point. I dare say if we dropped a Black Adam reference in there, I wouldn't even get it.
Mm.
So like, and he hasn't done any yet because everything he's done has popped. So I don't know if that's ever going to be forthcoming. So long answer to a short question. He is too good, but I welcome this while we have it because we won't forever. And if people are smart, they ask him questions while he's around. They try and get any sort of, not a rub, because ultimately he's obviously going to share the screen with the people he's involved
yeah.
with, but get the benefit of his presence and get the, like, sit down with him and see if there's anything. Maybe he can't learn it from somebody like The Rock because he kind of elevated himself beyond wrestling a long time ago, but if there's things to get from someone, get them from Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, I do. I disagree somewhat with the take of he's too good and that's detrimental to WWE on a couple of fronts. Yes, there were concerns, and I agreed with them, but I had more confidence than others with regards to Seth Rollins. I always thought Cody was going to be fine. He's yep. Cody. He's going to, you know, he can take the shots that The Rock's landing and Roman and, you know, Paul Heyman and stuff. He's still Cody. He's still going to be beloved. He's still the guy that everyone wants to finish the story on night two of WrestleMania, even if, myself included, some people want him to lose on night one.
Well, yeah.
Seth was more of a concern. Roman's Roman, and I think if anything, you know, people saying, oh, isn't he overshadowed by The Rock? Yeah, that's kind of part of it. Like, he's never been the champion he thinks he is because he's had to cheat at every opportunity, and he's inflated the numbers as well by not wrestling very often either. But I also think with people saying, oh, well, what's that like for the rest of the roster if you tune in? You're like, oh, it's nice, but it's not The Rock. I get that. I understand that yes, it's not The Rock. But I think it's also part of the fact that as a, well, I was going to say a day one Rock fan, a year two or three Rock fan, because that's when I kind of got into it.
Mm-hmm.
He was the gateway. He was the reason I got into wrestling. He's my favorite wrestler of all time, as I've said on a million occasions. But I'd watch him and then I'd go, oh, I like that Scotty Too Hotty guy.
Yeah.
And the two cool lads, they seem awesome. And I like so-and-so and so-and-so. And I think arguably that's the thing that they're trying to do with WWE. There's no point trying to have Austin Theory go toe-to-toe with him on the microphone, but people could tune in and go, bloody hell, that Joaquin Wilde's really talented, or oh, I like the, and he's not The Rock, but I like the chops on LA Knight, or, oh, that's really unfair on Bayley. I'm gonna get behind her at WrestleMania. So I think, what's the phrase? The rising rock,
rising tide raises all ships.
Rock raises all wrestlers.
That's the phrase.
That's it. Get on a t-shirt with greatness echoes greatness.
This is another as well. This ad, I want a t-shirt.
Rainmaker. More like fishmonger.
This is another case as well of, I think, and I understand it, I'm in this point in, again, because of that YouTube comment, if nothing else, I've decided to trust WWE's process.
Okay.
I'm going to overpraise the Fed because the people want it.
They're the listening company.
Indeed. I think there is a little underlying panic of the era of the WrestleManias, which is relatively recent, where all the stars have turned up in February, and then you get a big show in March/April, and then strap in for 11 months and not caring about anybody.
When's the Rumble again?
Yeah, huge problem, massive problem. They couldn't build stars, they couldn't create long-standing stories that you cared about, all that sort of stuff. Vince McMahon was useless for near 20 years. Hollywood Rock was based on Vince McMahon being useless all the way back in 2003. And so much of that, I think, sticks around now. We have in The Rock a star of yesteryear, tagging with Roman Reigns, like a part-timer at this point. The world champion, but in any other name, a part-timer. Whilst Cody Rhodes, the person who is absolutely going to be the guy for the next however long, and Seth Rollins, this guy that desperately wants to be the guy, works hard for it, but can't ever be
workhorse.
Like, feel like, A, they could be overshadowed, but B, the whole show could be overshadowed by that. So I get that, almost that hangover criticism, but I just don't buy it or believe in it anymore. I don't subscribe to it personally. I think last year was Triple H's big statement of intent of almost no legends. Cena, you get out there early. I don't even care if you fob it off, and wow, did he fob it off.
Mm-hmm.
Get out there early, do something in the daylight with Austin Theory, who I also don't like. Like, I'm saying it's Triple H, but that's also in first person. And then let's get on to the people I've built and the matches I've built and the stories I've told. And that was pretty much it, wasn't it? You know, like, but it was still a double bloodline weekend for the main events. It was still reliant on a lot of people. Like, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn were brand new to the top of the WrestleMania card, but they were far from brand new to WWE.
Yeah.
It's just for the first time we're seeing a lot of these wrestlers get the chances and the opportunities to be in engaging long-term stories. And if you look underneath this, not just the matches that were set up on this SmackDown that we're going to talk about, but if you look up and down this WrestleMania card, it's still full of things that are basically the weekly TV wrestlers.
Yes.
You've still got Gunther in a massive IC title match, Sami Zayn / Gable and Sami Zayn.
Jimmy and Jay's been built since last WrestleMania, effectively.
Jimmy and Jay's virtually a one-year build, but at very least some SummerSlam. The tag team ladder match, whilst not necessarily my cup of tea, is basically an advertisement, a flex of, we've got all those tag teams now.
Yep.
Like, I've actually pushed tag team wrestling. The women's title programs are big time. Like, Bayley and Io aren't going to main event, and more's the pity. But Rhea and Becky is about the biggest women's match the company can book. So I think there's loads of, like, nobody is going to be thinking, oh, well, in 3 weeks, heading in that Raw SmackDown run between WrestleMania and Backlash, this is rubbish now because The Rock's gone. Some people will, but I think those people would have thought that anyway.
Yes.
I think a lot of these full buildings are going to stay full after The Rock has gone.
Like, Josh Brown said he's going to tune in for the...
Yeah.
But he's only tuning in for The Rock.
Yeah. Like, while he's watching, what's he going to see where he's going to be like, to your two cool point, what's he going to see where he's going to think, oh, like... That's pretty goated, actually. I need to see the follow-through now this is happening. And then you just never know.
Mm.
I think at this point, to assume that like the full buildings, the hot crowds, all that sort of stuff, are exclusively as a result of someone like The Rock would be pretty dumb and bad faith.
Mm.
This has been happening like for virtually all of 2023.
Tip them over the top, but yes.
Yeah. Like I would argue the result of WrestleMania 39 and the post-WrestleMania Raw was the only moment where a lot of people, myself included, are locked in on WWE, thought, that's gone.
Yeah.
Like, and we put that at the feet of one man, basically, and then he was gone as well. So I think I get the criticism, but I just don't particularly agree with it, and WrestleMania will show us how legit it is. I am now thinking The Rock might pin Cody Rhodes on night one and not even turn on night two, because if The Rock's about and there are rumours that there's one more matching him, like Rock and Cody for the belt.
It's SummerSlam.
Pretty huge, isn't it? I'm almost thinking you've got so much meat on the Rock and Cody bone that you don't even do the Rock Roman turn now.
You beat Roman, but you haven't beaten the final boss.
Yeah, which Roman hates. Having to hear that, where Roman, even if he's not even on telly, if he's just running around naked on the Island of Relevancy, like, Paul Heyman's got the message over to him. So I just think there's, at this point, a Rock and Cody singles match. Maybe even before a Rock and Roman one.
Yeah.
There's two. They saw the Rock's come back. There's two more singles matches. It's not just special attraction Dwayne.
You could do SummerSlam, Survivor Series, and then you've got the Rumble to establish Cody's challenger at Mania, for example.
Yeah. I don't know Rock's filming schedule. I don't know his availability.
He's doing something from May to August, but it's late August, so arguably...
Yeah, I just...
Could speed run it.
Doesn't feel like...
Or just do Instagram videos.
And again, you've got to remember who you're speaking of. The context of the Rock you're speaking to is the same person that over a seven-day period realised that him challenging Roman wasn't going to take. Yeah. So he's already listened, and he's already sort of thought, well, we can rethink this, we can rejig this. He used to say, having done it and seen the lay of the land... Like, he's in this. He's in wrestling, and he's knowing that Cody's making these towns and selling these buildings out. Why would he not want to extend that in his legit position as the, what is he, the CEO or whatever it is? Like, that position he's got on the board? I just think they're all too clever, and I think people should submit a little bit more to The Rock as an entertaining figure than to panic about his status.
Any final words on The Rock concert?
It was good. It was... Absolutely shoot goated. Not even conditional goated. It was just shoot goated. The Rock is cooking. In fact, it will even say so now at the start of his rebadge theme, because if you remember, before it doesn't have the whole, it just says, it's cooking. Prince superstar.
Yeah.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's talk about the rest of this show, though, because there was lots of other events happening. We had numerous matches for that six-pack tag team ladder match at WrestleMania. First of all, the LWO versus Legado del Fantasma. LWO didn't get an entrance because The Rock needs his time.
This and all, give a f***.
Yeah.
Like, it's The Rock. Like, get over, get more time.
Yeah.
I know it sounds cruel. I know it sounds harsh. I know it sounds a bit like capitalist Shark Tank stuff, but doing better.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
Phantasma have control early. They're working over Del Toro. Del Toro finally gets over to Joaquin Wilde, who's really grabbing people's attention, which I'm so happy for because he's phenomenally talented. They hit a double super kick on Humberto, and they hit stereo suicide dives, get Humberto back in, and Del Toro hits an assisted springboard moonsault for a two count, which was great to take us through the break. When we come back, the LWO. They hit a double slam from the second rope for a two count. Humberto runs at Del Toro, but Del Toro hits a Spanish fly, hot tag to Wild. He hits a double drop kick on the heels. Loads of big moves from him. A tornado DDT on Angel for a near fall. Del Toro tries to get involved, but Phantasma catch him, get rid of him, and then they hit their finisher and get the 1-2-3. The Legado del Fantasma team or aren't through to the six-pack challenge, they're probably going to get screwed out of it by the LWO next week.
Feels that way. I was quite relieved when I realised how the tournament was going to work. I think we thought these were instant qualifiers.
Me too, yeah.
And then when you look at the lay of the land and the matches next week and the things still to come, like, it makes a bit more sense. I think you're right. The match was fine. Ultimately, we've talked about this across a few different pods lately. The LWO being working babyfaces is definitely the role for them. It's where they're going to get more attention. It's where they're going to get, like, shared by people on X because they're a far more flashier team than they were able to maybe work as. And not even just, like, I don't know. I feel like right now they'll be crafting spots that are perfect for WrestleMania. Like the ones.
I think I was reassured by them booking later on in the show, spoilers, Santos versus Rey for next week because, I mean, that's just going to build to a multi-man, isn't it?
I couldn't have loved that more. I feel like we've been talking about this multi-man match for several months.
Yeah.
And it's been more out of hope than expectation. And the fact that there's a singles match seems to, like, and so many ancillary members on both sides seems to be a layup, doesn't it, for the multi-man?
Even if you just make it an elimination. And then you get it down to Santos and Ray, for example.
This week's SmackDown preview, you're going to have about 20 guys on each side. It's going to look like one of the 80s Survivor Series matches with all the tag partners.
Then we get
LA Knight.
And the entrance ramp. LA Knight, because he's a gentleman, asked to take the microphone. And he wants to talk to us. Brings up AJ Styles. AJ talking last week, he said about the fact that LA Knight needs to be humbled. That's his kind of language. So he offers AJ out. He offers him a shot right now. Come on, humble me. No AJ Styles, and that's exactly what Knight thought. Another week where he couldn't be bothered to show up because he's not big enough for this ride, little man. Some good, nice lines in here from Knight. Old Napoleon Styles himself running his mouth. He could take the flight all the way to Australia, but he couldn't come to Memphis. X doesn't mark the spot. Knight spots the marks, and AJ's the biggest one of them all.
Oh, my God.
All right.
I like that one.
I'll give you that one.
If you can't show up to SmackDown, though, LA Knight knows somewhere he's going to be and wants to be, and that's WrestleMania. He challenges him. He says he's going to own his ass, and he's going to find out whose game is it, LA Knight. And as he stands there to celebrate, AJ jumps from behind. He should have looked into it more backstage because AJ Styles would have been knocking him. Has AJ Styles turned up? Yes. But AJ jumps in with a chair. Yeah, nails him and does the whole sitting on the chair whilst it's on LA Knight's chest and accepts the challenge for WrestleMania.
Yeah, long shows, you need a week. I like this for a few reasons. I like that it wasn't set up with a wrestling match because it would have pissed off the stopwatch wankers. I like that LA Knight was given promo time, 20 minutes after The Rock. This is a man that's carried that Stone Cold Rock Austin tag for a lot of his career and didn't look A, out of place, or B, remotely like a Rock clone.
Very comfortable in his own skin now, isn't he? Yeah.
He understood the assignment of being LA Knight first and popping the crowd second. And I just think that's pressure. I honestly think it's, don't get me wrong, I think the last match was, it did suffer through following The Rock. We see, like, this is a reality when you've sometimes got really, like, hot stuff, whether it be promos or segments or angles, a match in that place afterwards. Like, AW and the women's match thing used to be a nightmare for how it would follow, like, some elite banger, and it was like, right, send the bloody women out there. WWE's just as guilty as that. They're kind of the originators with the Divas spot.
Kind of first guys.
Kind of the first guys to do that. But this would have been the exact way I wanted to set up. I don't need to see these two interact physically once now before WrestleMania. And this was obviously on the whiteboard as early as AJ Styles coming back in, what was it, like January before the Rumble? Mm-hmm. He targeted LA Knight specifically.
Bumped each other, didn't they? And then he was like, actually, I'm going to drop you rather than team up with you.
So it might not be for everybody, but I think if these two are your faves, you've seen this in the offing for quite a while and they're going to follow through with it.
I like the fact that this week they just decided, we'll just announce all the WrestleMania matches right now, no messing about. Because
Love it.
Logan Paul goes to see Nick. Go see the general manager of SmackDown. Forget what his name is. Almost remembered it, but it's just escaped my mind. And he's asking, what's Randy's punishment for everything that went down last week with the RKO and KSI and all that? And SmackDown GM thinks, and Logan wants an apology for everything, all the trouble and that. And he's probably going to get in with even higher ups because of that. The SmackDown GM says, I think a better idea. Why don't you ask for the apology in person? And Logan's like, I think that's your job. You can't even find me opponent for WrestleMania. Not much to expect, is there? We'll get back to this in a little while. Then it's another shot backstage. There's Paul Heyman. There's Jimmy Uso. There's Solo Sikoa. They're jumped by Caleb Braxton with a microphone.
Yeah, it's always good.
Scares the life out of Paul Heyman. And basically, they're asked about Jey Uso's challenge to his brother, and Jimmy talks about all the stuff that they've been through as a team. But before all that, before all, you know, record-breaking title reigns and WrestleMania main events, before all that, Jey was just his little brother, and he accepts the challenge for WrestleMania. Yeet!
No yeet. On Fridays, when you know this.
Sorry.
Respect your tribal chief's wishes. Yeah. Am I picking up on a storyline detail? Or is WWE thick? You answer the question for me.
Why not both?
It might well be both here. They weren't on the show otherwise, were they?
No.
Did they fly into town to walk into the building with the hope of being interrupted to just keep walking right out the exit? Or were they summoned by the final boss to be present on a big night without double checking with the tribal chief?
Oh, that's good. It? I'll go that one, obviously.
Realistically, the bad admin one, isn't it?
Yeah. Or what were they there for, yeah.
But now I've given you that.
Or logistically, they just filmed it last week.
I like that too.
Then we got Randy Orton versus Grayson Bloody Waller. Logan came out before the match even started to watch from commentary. Waller used that as an excuse to jump start the match and jump Randy Orton. Orton spills to the outside with him after turning the tables. Throws Waller into the timekeeper's area, but Logan Paul being there distracts Orton long enough to allow Waller to do that awesome, I forgot what it's called.
The rolling
slam, but onto the commentary table.
You see a lot more of that in NXT, didn't they? Yeah. They've obviously made him tone that down a bit because it's a bit...
Let's roll in there. That's dead man's kind of thing. We come back from the break. Waller's in control. Orton fires back up, though. Clotheslines, power slam, sets up for the draping DDT, but Waller... Body drops Orton to the outside, so he gets slammed into the table, Grayson Waller, twice in front of Logan Paul, who's just yelling, get up! Austin Theory jumps on the apron, collides with Waller. Orton gets the draping DDT, sets up for the RKO, but Theory pulls Waller out of the ring, so Orton hits a draping DDT on him. And Waller tries to use his opportunity to hit him with that finish, the rolling finisher of his. But Orton just hits him with an RKO and gets the 1-2-3. Post-match, Theory chop blocks Randy Orton's leg, invites Paul into the ring to kick his ass. Paul, he's got his arms. Orton's got his arms held back by Theory. But Kevin Owens' music hits. He runs down. They bail. Randy Orton gets up, almost RKOs Kevin Owens. But there's Theory. I mean, this looked preposterous.
Oh, boy.
But Theory gets hit with the stunner and jumps into the... Well, he gets hit with the stunner, lands on his feet, and then jumps into the air to be RKO'd from Orton. It didn't quite go to plan, this, but I'll give him points for trying. And the SmackDown GM walks out and says, you get that apology then, Logan, which I thought was a nice way of doing that.
Yeah.
And he says, don't worry, I've determined your opponent at WrestleMania. Go! What am I saying? Opponents. It's Randy Orton and Kevin Owens.
Oh, my God.
I'm glad you think so. I'm not so keen on that as a match, I guess.
He's a snake there, Randy Orton. Never trust a snake.
Well, indeed. And is if him and Owens are trying to initiate that as a tag finisher, it needs work, brothers.
Needs Logan Paul.
It might need Logan Paul springing his step. Yeah, I want to compliment, by the way, Kevin Owens channeling the spirit of Bo Dallas and El Torito with the way in which he breezed past Grayson Waller.
How the way you.
No look bundle over. That was great. Match was knocked right home about. We've seen Randy Orton.
We knew what was coming from it, didn't we?
Yeah, we've seen Randy Orton do this match against these guys. The table spot is obviously one that's going to happen.
Grayson Waller's going to put him over on a podcast in 20 years' time.
Aye, yeah. I didn't feel a goddamn thing. Well, yeah, neither did I, pal. Yeah, I can't lie. I'm like just a bit, felt a bit empty at the end for me. This, like, the I've seen the, and not because we were fantasy booking Steve Austin in a tag match. We've seen every combination of this lot, but the three that are in the mania match. Yeah. So they've at least dodged that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not.
And what are the disqualification rules in a triple threat? Just to double check that.
There's no DQ.
Oh, okay. So. So Stone Cold could show up.
Oh, I see. With stunners for everybody.
Or Theory. Or Waller. Or KSI dressed as a prime ball.
I want that. I do want KSI dressed as a prime ball. A different one this year. Whatever the flavour of the week.
What if Randy Orton RKO is the prime ball and it's just like a competition winner? KSI jumps him.
I'll make you a deal. I'll sanction this as being one of the highlights of WrestleMania. If KSI is a prime ball, but it's second year around, sequels are never quite as good. They're wise to it. They're onto it. So Steve Austin does arrive, but he comes dressed as like a big bottle of Bud.
On his little
quad bike. Like Surly from the, you know, the Duff mascots in the Simpsons. Oh, and then there's like, as a third person, you know, Kevin Owens' son, the little kid that was in the John Cena video, is now like a kick-ass monster jock that's probably going to end up at the performance center. Yeah. He can come out like a bottle of Mountain Dew.
Like that.
Yeah.
No notes.
All right, I like this three-way now then.
We get a recap of Dakota Kai turning on Bayley, and then Damage Control cut a promo. We'd seen him arriving earlier on. Kai promises to break Bayley tonight, and anyone who sides with her is crazy. Bayley's jealous of EO, threatened by Asuka and Kairi, so they had to cut her loose. They run this show, basically. More on that in a little while. Then we got a very brief match between Santos Escobar and Dragon Lee. Dragon Lee obviously trying to fight the good fight and did well here, but it was always going to be the numbers game that catches up to him. There was interference from Legado del Fantasma, and as a result of that, Escobar hit the Phantom Driver for the win. They attack Lee post-match. Carlito comes out to make the save, but again, the numbers game catches up to him. Here comes Rey Mysterio, though. He's evened it out. He sets up Escobar for the 619, but he manages, Santos does, to roll to the outside before he can hit it. And Mysterio grabs a microphone, says he's going to slap that arrogant smile off his face. A lot of slapping going on right now. And challenge him to a match next week, which we're going to excitedly preview on Friday because, yeah, they're cooking with this.
This is a content I crave from SmackDown. Not only do I only have like a short match to watch now, I've got a different match to get excited about next week. It's like a decent viewing experience, an even longer period of anticipation.
Yeah.
It's almost like that's how you promote things. Like, I really, really like the little slither of action I got without feeling like overexposed to Santos and Dragon Lee going again another day. I like Dragon Lee as a singles wrestler on SmackDown.
Brilliant.
I think he's fitting really well. Like, he's such a welcome presence as well, because these matches have been cut short by like long Rock promos or just like other WrestleMania stuff overshadowing them. So when you have got people out there, you want it to give you something to feel. That was my main issue with that Orton match, truthfully. Dragon Lee's got it in spades, and he's got like loads in the chamber still as well. And yeah, a singles match for next week, I couldn't have been happier. I thought the WrestleMania challenge was coming, and now, like, what is the worst thing that can happen now is that it's a straight singles match between Rey and Santos in a rematch. And that's the worst. That's still going to be pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Next is, like, some sort of stitched-up thing between the two of them. And that's obviously, for WrestleMania, when there's so many other matches on the card, that's probably a better version than straight singles. And then, like, magical option C, the one that we've been pitching all this time, is LWO ringer, basically, sending the super sub, Bad Bunny joining the LWO. And if not him, by the way, this has always been our dream booking, but it's not like the shorter numbers to make this some sort of wild plunder brawl, or as you say, like an elimination to the point where you end up with Rey and Santos. Yeah. Anyway, I really would love it if there was something to, like Andrade's... simmering little thing with Dominic on Raw, like the Judgment Day B team haven't got anything on at WrestleMania yet. So I wait. Like I say, bare minimum, I think this is going to be some sort of like weapons rematch, but we'll see.
Then we got another qualifier match for the six-pack challenge, six-pack tag team thing, I should say. It was the new Catch Republic, Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne.
You did it.
Versus, yeah, I got there. It was fine when I was written down for it. versus,
yes,
Kier Wilson, Elton Prince, who I still insist should be the host of WrestleMania.
It's looking good for it now.
Yeah.
There's nobody else in place.
Dunn butchers one of their hands. Oh, accidental, that one.
That's good.
Early on. Pretty deadly takeover, but Tyler Bate is... This is not a good way of showcasing just how brilliant he is. Mm. Caught Wilson in midair, hit a suplex, standing shooting star press, and then spun around in a big airplane spin to take us to break. When we come back, he gets Wilson up for a huge vertical suplex. There for a long old time. Prince comes in, but so does Dunn. He gets the hot tag. Enziguri's everywhere, works an armbar on Prince, stamps on his fingers. They hit the double drop kick when Bate comes back in. Bate goes for a pin. Wilson breaks it up. It all breaks down. They're all four of them in the ring. Bate runs into a big boot from Wilson. They run both Bate and Dunn into the ring post. They hit their double team bulldog, but Tyler Bate kicks out. Dunn tags in, and they hit the Birmingham.
Oh my God.
For the win.
I
put them in the ladder match.
Really like this, and I am rooting so much for Bate and Dunn to make it into that ladder match. I shared the story on the preview of my cousin Nick, who I will be attending WrestleMania with, lifelong fans we are together. However, having never attended a WrestleMania together, for him it will be seeing them in the Cadbury Club with 50 people in Bourneville near Birmingham to seeing them at WrestleMania. I would like that for personal lore, and maybe that informed my enjoyment of this match, because there were at least 2 points in this where I thought Pretty Deadly were going to steal it, and I felt like, don't do this, you bastards. Like, when they lost to the Judgment Day at Elimination Chamber, it was very much, well, back of the line. But then it turned out the match at WrestleMania features three quarters of the line. So you got a chance of getting back in. When the SmackDown GM said, oh, I'm not sure that I can just put you back in a WrestleMania match, and then a WrestleMania match features six teams, but then you've still got to work your way to get there.
Yeah.
I suddenly found myself incredibly invested in Bate and Dunn's story.
A stacked tag division. I've always said this.
It is a big tag division. enough to do these tournament matches, ultimately. That's what we've seen. I just didn't think that Pretty Deadly, of all teams, would have me like on the edge of my seat for taking something that I didn't think was theirs. I like them as heels. I wouldn't have minded them getting to WrestleMania to see some hijinks, but I'm with you. Like, you can do hijinks and skits and bits. I want...
They're the people who should get attacked by a legend.
Yeah.
Like, Pretty Deadly out there. We're in Philadelphia. What's Philadelphia famous for? I don't know, some ECW bollocks. Sandman comes out, for example.
Cheesesteak check! And they're just holding cheesesteaks. Right? I think... And
I will be saying at every restaurant we go in, please.
Oh, people are going to hate us.
Cheesesteak check, please.
Philadelphia's full of, like, really tough people that are going to shoot kick our ass unless we run from them. And, like, it's going to be like a Scooby-Doo thing, and I have to run through doors to avoid them. Honestly... I don't think this take will be shared, well, not even by Sidgwick, let alone like a lot of other people that watch that, like, sort of enjoy WWE. But I have a feeling that, like, Dunn and Bate, should they qualify, and I really believe in my heart they will, they're going to go into this thing as the proper dark horses. And the more I see about this pitch about them splitting the belts, the more I think it might just happen.
Yeah.
I'm not massively in favour of it, but the Judgment Day losing two set of belts at a WrestleMania is a bit... They did this once before. You remember Angle losing his belts in the double triple threat thing with Jericho and Benoit? Like, the Judgment Day... Like, especially in that setting, losing, but like, you got...
Imagine then leaning on Damian Priest. We should use that cash in for the tag belts probably again, shouldn't we, Damian?
That's what it should be for, shouldn't it? Like, imagine frigging Pete Dunne and R-Truth up a ladder together, and they just both grab a belt, and everybody's happy.
Just gives him R-Truth gives him a thumbs up, and Pete
Dunne breaks it. But they're champions anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Main event time. Oh, next week we're getting Mysterio Escobar, AOP versus Street Profits. That's not going to finish. OC.
Well, it needs to. It's a tournament match. Or unless the OC have played a blinder and just like, well, if we win our match, we got to buy.
Yeah. We're in both, all the tag matches that weekend.
Yeah, a bit busy.
Yeah. And Cody and Roman go face to face.
Oh, my God.
Main event time, though, it was Dakota Kai versus Bayley. Bayley obviously immediately goes after Dakota Kai. There's a whoop that trick chant, which is, of course, for...
The local sports
Trick Williams,
team.
Yeah. Bayley slams Kai into the apron.
I love Trick Williams. I hope it was him. Yeah. I've heard stuff.
Yeah. suplexes Kai to the outside. And as damage controls surround Bayley, we go to our final commercial break. Asuka tries to interfere when we come back. Bayley avoids it, but gets hit with a big double stomp from Dakota Kai. They look great. So good to see her back in the ring. Asuka hit Bayley whilst Kai's taking the referee. That gets a two count for Dakota. That awesome draping neckbreaker stunner thing that she does in the ropes from Bayley gets her back into it. She goes to the top, hits a flying elbow drop. That gets two. Kai hits a Pele kick to take back over. And Bayley and Sky have a bit of a row, but Kai breaks it up with a big knee to Bayley's head. But then Bayley catches Kai and hits a powerbomb. So at that point, Io Sky gets in the ring, puts the title down, shouts at Bayley. She attacks her, DQ, of course. And it's about damage control now, trying to take Bayley out of the WrestleMania match. But who should run down to make the save? But Naomi. But the numbers game, again, allows damage control to dominate. Sky goes to the top, over the moonsault on Bayley. Damage control, stand tall for now.
Yeah. Mixed feelings on this. There was a pretty great match threatening to break out here. And we knew it never would. We both called the non-finish. We basically called everything that happened to it. Like, and I think everybody would. I say this sometimes. Predictable can be good because yep. it shows you that the stories they're telling are logical and cohesive and you're being given instructions to see things play out, and they do. So I don't have a problem with the way it played out. Like, I think there are times and places for non-finishes, and this was one. A couple of things. Dakota Kai was so good, having been out for so long, that I almost felt a little bit robbed that we weren't getting something a bit more, not legitimate, you know, proper. Just like, oh my God, she is all the way back.
Yes.
And like in that tag match, she could have basically feigned her proper return and she could have still been injured and you would have got away with it. No, goddamn no. She was out to make the point, and I'm fit, I'm good to go. I'm working WrestleMania. It was it was class, right? Naomi comes out, and obviously the point is Bianca doesn't.
Yeah, there's a big EST chance, wasn't there?
Of course. Like, the people are rooting for Bianca to do the right thing, but Bianca has given you all the reasoning as to why. Is it the right thing?
Yeah.
Like, and...
why now, all of a sudden? Yeah, should
I? And this draws my fundamental problem with what I think is at the core issue of why this story is not as hot as it should be, and why crowds, other than WWE's booking the women's division in general, but why crowds are not exactly coming unglued for this. It was a flat... Damage control over the... baby faces, but it wasn't like they were having, it wasn't the NWO in the ring getting pelted with litter.
No.
It's a fairly flat ending to SmackDown. I think ultimately they've got the pacing of this all wrong. Like, Bayley's turn was too quick. Mm-hmm. The apology tour was boiled down to one interview where she was like, yeah, I was doing it for an attention. Sorry, guys. and so you're kind of with Bianca at this point.
Yes.
And Bianca, it might be as simple as Bianca hugs Bayley, and that's the endorsement that she was lacking to just make sure that, like, oh, folks, we are back. Because she came out as a babyface to wrestle as a singles face for the first time, and she was, like, high-fiving fans again. Mm. I was like, oh, God, like, Bayley, like, she's not doing the thumbs down anymore. Like, if this is a show in England, she's going to get the, hey, hey, Bayley chance, and she can just embrace them.
Yes.
This is so cool that Bayley's back as a babyface. But I just think that some of the ways in which this story has been told have meant that it isn't as effective as it should be. The sympathy is not with her yet. She's won the Rumble. That's class. But within the context of this story, I think it really needs the last Bianca ingredient, and that endorsement in turn. Like, not only will it help Bayley, but it should create this reason for this, what we assume is going to be this tag. A quick note on that as well. I couldn't help, I'm sure you got this. It's hard not to be distracted by worrying that Asuka was injured.
Yeah.
You see her hobbling around the ring, and it was like, oh God, is she all right? Because then you're doing the maths in your head, and you're like, this causes us some problems, guys.
I did think that, but then I also, nothing against Asuka. I love her. She's phenomenally talented. I did also think, watching this, I'll just go to Caretaker Place. She's mint, so.
Brutal industry. Brutal game. But, like, the 3-on-3 that they appear to be, like...
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Asuka.
Asuka who?
A show business.
Yeah. That's definitely the sentiment I was looking for when I brought up her injury worry when I was watching.
I hope she's fine, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, Kabuki Warrior's putting the belts on the line, or as we keep just... It's basically... It's not so much fantasy booking as it is galaxy brain fantasy booking of, like, I think there's one person missing. I think that person's Jade Cargill, so you're at WrestleMania, based on nothing at all other than one face-off 2 weeks ago. Like, but we're going to cling on to that for dear life.
Do you know what my... Right now, I change every week. Uh-huh. I go Naomi and Bianca tag challenge, but who counteracts Dakota Kai at ringside?
Running. Jade Cargill with the running.
Huge gap, and then you can just do something after Mania with her.
Yeah.
And you've not saddled her with a tag, with a belt that, you know, she's Jade Cargill. You could put her in a title match tomorrow and no one would argue.
I said it, man, last
singles
year.
Singles, that is, I mean.
They almost, Triple H has been guilty of forgetting those belts friggin' exist, and there was a 6-woman last year with the tag champions in it against Damage Katara. Mm-hmm. I could see them running that again. But I don't know how you heat it up. I've not got all the answers on this one because I love Bayley. I'm saying this as a massive, massive Bayley fan who can't wait to be in person for having this, like, vindication on a WrestleMania stage. But I'd be lying. Like, this is not the year where I'm sitting here where there's a viable case for this being main event, because it just isn't.
No. I will say this. I understand why they did what they did. They had to do what they did this week for the huge pat they're going to get next week or the week after.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did feel like getting your ducks in a row rather than a big hot ending to a show that started white hot.
We got three left.
Two left. And then one, we won't really get a chance to preview because we'll be travelling.
So me and you, I think, have only got one left.
Yes.
I'm just saying SmackDown, I believe, has got two left. I don't know.
Three left. I don't know the math. We've got three Raws left, so we must have
third
three.
Show. I don't know.
Next week.
But it's Good Friday.
Next week, Good Friday, which we won't be here for. Sorry, everyone. It's the holidays and we have children.
Just when you're watching SmackDown and getting excited about something, know that me and Will want to get excited about it too.
We might try and record that on the Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Our last preview.
Yeah.
Before WrestleMania. Da-na-na-na-na. Da-na-na-na-na-na.
Because the go-home show is going to be kind of trash usually.
Yeah, they got so that.
We'll preview the penultimate week.
Nothing's trash in there. Not a goddamn thing.
Well, let us know what you thought to this show on X at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
Follow me at Adam Wilburn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. As I said, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. The Raw preview is available right now. Me and Sid will be here to review AEW Collision a little bit later on. But for now, and we'll be back on Friday, like I say, to get really giddy. It's preview SmackDown. But for now, this has been the SmackDown review. My thanks to Michael Hamblett. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.